If you've been to the state capitol in Salem, Oregon, you may have noticed the 23-foot-tall Oregon Pioneer statue on top of the building. In Seaside, there's a commemorative statue of the pioneers Lewis and Clark called the End of the Trail. The University of Oregon features a statue of an Oregon pioneer, and in Ashland, Pioneer Mike overlooks the downtown plaza. Pioneer Mike is also prominently featured on the badges of the Ashland Police Department. The bottom line here is Oregon loves its pioneers. But let's be clear on the context. Oregon loves its white pioneers. The schools ensure every student is exposed to the history of Oregon's white pioneers. But did you know there were also black pioneers in Oregon history? The Oregon Black Pioneers Organization will host historical walking tours in Jacksonville on May 17th. Joining me on the exchange to tell us more are two guests. Mariah Rocker is the Public Programs and Exhibits Manager at Oregon Black Pioneers. Welcome.
Hi, good morning.
And Carter Bond is the Administrative and Collections Assistant at the Bowman Museum in Prineville, Oregon. He worked with the Oregon Black Pioneers on the Jacksonville walking tour for his capstone project when he graduated from Southern Oregon University. Welcome, Carter.
Good morning. It's so great to be here.
So, Mariah, let's start with the work that you do at Oregon Black Pioneers.
Great. I'd love to talk about the work that we do, as I find that it is so important, especially right now. So I am part of Oregon Black Pioneers, Oregon's only historical society dedicated to preserving and presenting the experiences of people of African descent statewide. So we're the only organization that's trying to capture and share all of the stories throughout the state of Oregon and sometimes beyond the borders that we now today recognize. And so we capture these stories and share them in a variety of different ways, including public programs, exhibits, research, education. We have online exhibits on our website, books, lesson plans, and then, of course, what we're talking about today, the walking tours throughout the state.
So, Mariah, your work is quite unique. Tell me about your journey. Where'd you grow up, and how'd you get interested in history?
Sure. So that's a great question, and they kind of align perfectly, so way to tee me up perfectly. I grew up in the Pacific Northwest generally. I spent some time in Idaho and some time in Eastern Washington and graduated in Washington and then found my way to Oregon and have been in Portland for about a decade. And during that time, I lived in a lot of rural areas where I wasn't seeing myself reflected in a lot of the people around me and especially in the stories that I was being told in school, like you mentioned at the beginning of this program, and outside of that. And so in my own personal life, I began seeking out representation of people that looked like me and had stories that would align with my life and my lived experience. And as a result of that, I just started finding fun ways to share that history in my own personal time. So that would be, that I would sometimes craft miniature inventions to demonstrate when a Black inventor had a hand in something incredible like the Viewmaster or the Super Soaker, for example. I also take the time to dress up as historical figures during Halloween so that I can share their stories and also turn it into like a fun costuming thing. So I just really had been finding ways to share Black history and histories like these from marginalized communities in my personal time. And then I saw a job posting on something called Rad Jobs PDX on Facebook for this job. And it was like, it was made for me. It felt like a dream job, an opportunity to literally get paid to talk about stories like these in the place that I now call home. And so I jumped at the chance, and I am so lucky to be doing this work 2 years later, getting to share these stories all across the state and learning more and more about this state every day, which is awesome.
It sounds like you're a pioneer of this profession here in Oregon.
Thank you. I mean, wow. I hadn't really thought about it like that, but that is very kind.
So, Carter, tell me about the Bowman Museum.
Yeah, so the Bowman Museum focuses mostly on Central Oregon history and Crook County history. It's kind of a smaller scale museum, but I just started here about a few months ago, and so I'm kind of temporarily in charge of the collections for the time being. So I'm having a lot of fun creating the exhibits and cataloging records and whatnot. So it's pretty cool. Not a lot of records of Black pioneers in this area, unfortunately, but that is something that I'm looking to hopefully do more research on as time moves on. But it's a cool place.
You also worked with the Oregon Black Pioneers, right?
So my senior capstone project at SOU was on Black Pioneers in Jacksonville. I had kind of gotten started on that. I had heard vaguely about the exclusion laws in Oregon, but I didn't really know. All I knew was that there was exclusion laws that prohibited Black people from entering the state and it prohibited slavery as well. But then I had heard about Ben Johnson Mountain out in Rouge, and that it was a pretty interesting story. There was unfortunately some not great names associated with it in the past, and it used some pretty racist language. And in 2020, a local historian, Jan Wright, actually was able to associate that mountain with a Black pioneer of that area, Ben Johnson. And so that renamed that mountain after him. That kind of got me thinking, like, okay, if there was these exclusion laws and this man was here, what other stories can we tell? And so I got to kind of dive deep into the Jacksonville history, and surprisingly, there's a pretty diverse group of people that lived out there, despite what the laws might say.
So, where did you grow up, and what did you study at SOU?
Yeah, so I'm originally from San Diego. I've moved around a little bit throughout my life. I grew up in Kansas, and then I wanted to experience the Pacific Northwest, and so that's what brought me out to SOU. I studied sociology and the anthropology. I've always been a huge history buff. I've been told I was a random dispenser of information back in the day. So I always just loved telling facts and just really interested in the untold stories of history. I kind of just got really interested in this, and it's been a really great experience to work with the Oregon Black Pioneers.
My guess are Mariah Rocker, the public programs and exhibits manager at Oregon Black Pioneers, and Carter Bond, the administrative and collections assistant at the Bowman Museum in Prineville. So, Oregon's Black population today is still just a tiny fraction, like maybe 2% of the state's population. So why should Oregon's white population care about Black pioneers in the state, Mariah?
Well, we firmly believe that you can't know Oregon's history without knowing Oregon's Black history, as it is such a big part of the formation of the state. You know, there was a lot of focus on those Black exclusion laws, and despite the, you know, low population numbers, this was a very big aspect of what was being discussed at that time, and would have huge impacts on the, you know, the population numbers as they are today because of these early pioneers, the experiences they had, and really the exclusionary atmosphere that had been created at that time. And so it's so important to recognize both the history and how it has impacted the Black community in Oregon throughout, you know, since Oregon became a state, and even before that, literally those exclusion laws existed in every iteration of Oregon as a state. So as a provisional government, as a territory, and then as a state government. And then also recognizing the resilience and grit and perseverance of these incredible figures that would come here despite, you know, the exclusionary attitudes that they might have experienced, and build lives for themselves and even have impacts on, you know, the laws as they would impact other folks throughout time. There were court cases that were brought by Black individuals in these early days. And then later on, as time moved forward, it would be members of the Black community that would be some of the most vocal civil rights advocates in Oregon, you know, causing us to have the public accommodations bill in 53, you know, well before it would happen on a national level, because of the efforts of those folks that have been here. You know, Black history has existed in Oregon for basically as long as we can tell, since of non-Native history. And so it's important to recognize who has been here and the impacts that they have had, especially when those stories are often undertold or specifically left out of the narrative.
You know, it's so interesting because you speak of Oregon like it's a microcosm of the United States. When the states first joined the Union, they had to answer the question, what are you going to do with your black people? And it was slave or slave free. Eight of them said slave. And here in Oregon, you know, they joined as slave free, but their whole thing was, we don't want black people in the state, so we don't want the slaveholders bringing them here. We're going to put it in the Constitution. So this notion of what the fate is of black people was at the top of the list of priorities when the state was created. And as you talked about civil rights in Oregon, I don't even know about the civil rights movement in Oregon. This is, why now? Why is this a big issue now?
So we firmly believe that it's been a big issue. There have certainly been people, some of the pioneers that we talk about today even went to the efforts of trying to capture and share these stories. People like Martha Anderson, who would write about the black pioneers of the Northwest in the early 1900s. There have always been folks that have recognized the need to tell these stories, but my organization started doing that work in 1993. And we've been just growing and been able to focus on that work more and more every year. And since 2020, we have specifically had a paid staff. So that allows us to, as paid staff, to really dive in and make this our life, you know, make this our full focus of our work. And so we've been able to start to highlight and tell these stories more, which is vitally important at this point in time when these stories, specifically stories of, you know, of the black experience in America, are under attack right now. So being able to, being armed with these stories and making sure that they stay alive and within the zeitgeist is very important because of the efforts to do the opposite right now happening across the nation.
Oh, we'll get into that after the break. Carter, you've worked with Mariah on the Jacksonville Walking History Tours, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I had no idea about the history of black people in Jacksonville, and you've been studying that right here at Southern Oregon University.
Yeah, so I was just as surprised as you are to learn about the black pioneers in Jacksonville.
So tell me more. You mentioned Ben Johnson, and there was a mountain, and I understand, I've heard through the grapevine, that it used to be called the Inward Mountain. Wasn't this region populated by white Christian Protestants?
Yeah, so the area was mostly predominantly white, and I think in the 1920 census, a little later, but there was only less than 100 black people in the state or in the county of Jackson. It's predominantly a white area, and a lot of it's interesting because, as we mentioned, the exclusion laws, it barred slavery, but it also barred black people from entering. But both black people and those white slave owners just completely ignored those laws, and would bring people over here or would make lives for themselves. Jackson Berry, he was brought with H.A. Overbeck, and he was actually in 10 years as an, he was in Oregon for 10 years as an enslaved person. They made an agreement about 5 years into that that time that after 5 years, Jack Berry would be a freed man. And he had the choice to either move back to Missouri or stay in Oregon, and he chose to stay in Oregon, and he was able to make a life for himself. Another gentleman, Samuel Vose, he was actually one of the first black settlers in Jackson County. He came in the early 1850s, and he was brought with Charles Brooks. John Glancer also might be one of those gentlemen. They also had another agreement where they would be freed after a year. On the census, it lists some of their occupations as servants, and so I think that's how they kind of they got around the slavery aspect of it. But it is interesting that both parties kind of just ignored these laws. And on paper, it was how it went. But in reality, it was much, much different.
What were the conditions like for black people in Oregon's early history?
It kind of varied. For the most part, it was a negative experience. There was a lot of racialized language. I went through a lot of newspapers, and almost every instance where it mentioned a black person, it would make note of their race. It would talk really strongly about them, like in a lot of the obituaries. It would, like, Harriet Johnson, for example, it said
Hold on to that thought, because I want to get into how you found credible records and information on Black people in Oregon's history when we come back from the break. Now, before the break, we were talking about some of Oregon's more notable Black pioneers, and I asked Carter to help me understand how he found credible records and information to add to the resource library. So, Carter, you were talking about some of the more notable names here.
Yeah, so I was briefly talking about Harriet Johnson, who a lot of the newspapers mentioned she was well-respected, and but it did mention, you know, her race in there. So I thought that was pretty interesting how they respected them to a degree but still kept them separate. And so with that research, a lot of it came from the Southern Oregon Historical Society, and they have a lot of records of those primary source newspapers. And so that gives pretty good opinion, records of people's opinions and how they felt at that time. And then I was also able to go through Jackson County court records to get land deeds, agreements, and that sort of thing. And so Jack Berry, who I mentioned, came over with H.A. Overbeck. He was actually one of the earliest Black men to use the Homestead Act of 1962 to purchase land. And so he purchased land just outside of Jacksonville in 1868, I want to say. And so it's just interesting that despite what the laws say, these people were able to make a name for themselves.
So that's, now this is amazing to me because in the 1840s, they had the Oregon Donation Land Act. In 1862, you then had the Homestead Act. But 270 million acres through that Homestead Act were given to white families. And what I'm hearing you say is that using through that Homestead Act, not through the Freedmen's Bureau, which was 40 acres and a mule and something different, but through the Homestead Act, you're saying a Black man actually purchased property here in Oregon even before Black people were considered citizens of the United States, which didn't happen until the 14th Amendment in 1868. Am I understanding that correctly?
Go ahead, Ryan.
I just wanted to jump in on that. So technically for Jackson Berry and for the almost two dozen or so other Black folks that claimed land through the Homestead Act here in Oregon, most of them would have done so after 1868 when they were officially citizens. But it's funny that you mentioned that because someone not too far from here in Myrtle Creek, so, you know, just north of the area that we're kind of talking about, or maybe even within that area, Letitia Carson, a Black woman who came across the Oregon Trail, would actually become the first Black person in Oregon to get a Homestead Act claim in her name. And she may have done so prior. I mean, by the time she actually received the claim, she would have been considered a citizen. But when she first filed it, she may not have, or she would not have been considered a citizen. And so we are actually trying to uncover just how it is that she was able to kind of sneak past those barriers and manage to be the first person here in Oregon, the first Black person to get a homestead claim. And by that virtue, she might be the first Black person across the U.S. to have received an 1862 homestead claim as well. So there are literally Black people here in Oregon that might have been making national history through the Homestead Act.
Mariah, say her name again.
Letitia Carson.
Letitia Carson out of Myrtle Creek. That's over near Roseburg.
Near Roseburg. She claimed almost 160 acres there and would live out her life in that area after going to court twice. She has a story that looms larger than life, and I would definitely recommend folks look into it. But if you happen to be by Roseburg, the Roseburg Museum does have one of our exhibits about Letitia Carson on display for the rest of the month. So check that out if you're interested in her story.
That is amazing. Mariah, I'll ask you the same question I asked Carter. How do you find credible records and information to add to your resource library?
Yeah, it is a struggle, let me tell you. We Our organization has been working for 30 years, and we're still uncovering information every day. But oftentimes it is focusing on, right now it's very helpful that you can look through newspapers online. This is a kind of new feature of historical research that has helped us uncover a lot of news stories by being able to check these primary sources in terms of newspapers. We personally connected to that homestead story. Oregon Black Pioneers has been trying to really focus on homesteaders this summer, and we're doing a project called Staking Their Claim, where we're trying to tell these stories and find the homestead claims throughout Oregon and talk more about them. And so doing that, we've been using GLOW records, the General Land Office records, and searching their records. Right now, having access to online databases is really making it easier to access this information. But throughout time, you know, it was having to go physically comb through archives to find if there was, a piece of information that related to these individuals. So thankfully, the research is becoming a little bit easier, but because these stories were so often not seen as worth preserving, it is often, you truly have to dig to find a lot of those stories.
My guests are Mariah Rocker, the Public Programs and Exhibits Manager at Oregon Black Pioneers, and Carter Bond, the Administrative and Collections Assistant at the Bowman Museum in Prineville. So Carter, I started this segment talking about the various different statues all over Oregon dedicated to pioneers, and they're all white pioneers. You work at a museum. Do you know of any Oregon museums that feature black pioneers, or are there any statues, plaques, anything in the public square anywhere in the state?
Not out in this area, unfortunately. Central Oregon got pretty rough back in the day. So, despite like there being the Camwachong site, the Chinese mining site out in John Day, minorities really weren't. They were here, but we have not a huge record of them. So that's something that we are slowly kind of working on, and I would like to do more research on Black pioneers in this area as I familiarize myself with the local history a little bit more.
Mariah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I actually have another one that's somewhat local, and if time allows, I probably will mention this person on the Jacksonville walking tour, even though he only was in Jacksonville for a short period of time, but Lewis Southworth is a name that looms really large in the Waldport area. He actually received a homestead claim in the Waldport area and would run a ferry on the Allsea. He was well known throughout the town, and even donated half an acre of his land for the creation of a school. And he was, such a huge figure within Waldport's history that they recently had a statue created of him holding his fiddle, which he was famous for having played, and even earned some of the funds that he would use to purchase his freedom playing that fiddle. And so there's a statue of him in Waldport right now, and they also just recently renamed a city park for him, and will soon hopefully have that statue in that park. So that's one person in, somewhat southern Oregon that you can refer to that literally has a statue. And then also up here in Portland on Lewis and Clark's campus, there's also a statue of York, who is a figure that we often like to talk about as, the first black man to have set foot in Portland. And part of the Lewis and Clark expedition. So there are at least those two statues that I can think of off the top of my head. The Black Cultural Initiative in Eugene is working on creating a statue to commemorate the first black families to live in Eugene. So there are definitely some projects in the works.
So this is a work in progress. Say those names again.
So we've got Lewis Southworth in Waldport. We've got a York statue in Portland, and there is a statue commemorating the Eugene families happening in Eugene. Hopefully it'll be placed in Alton Baker Park, where some of those families would have originally lived in a community that was outside of town limits because the black folks weren't allowed to live in town at that point in time. And so they had created their own community, which would, of course, be targeted by urban renewal projects. And so that community was literally wiped off the map for the bridge that sits there today. So the Black Cultural Initiative in Eugene is looking to at least highlight that history with some sort of monument.
Well, we're trending in the right direction. Tell me about the schools. How do students in Oregon learn about Black Oregon pioneers?
That's a great question, and something that has been near and dear to my organization since the very beginning. We were actually created because the superintendent of schools in Salem in the 90s recognized that there was a, you know, woeful lack of this history within the schools. And so she copied what was being done in Seattle, the Northwest Black Pioneers, and we became Oregon Northwest Black Pioneers and then eventually dropped Northwest and became Oregon Black Pioneers specifically to get this information into schools. So one of our main focuses is that we have a lesson plan system where you can download free lesson plans for K through 12 on our website to incorporate this history into schools. And we've worked with many teachers across the state to create this curriculum and have plans to continue doing so moving forward. But it's funny that you mention it because we are actually right now hiring for an education manager. The applications are due on Monday. So we are hoping to really to get someone on our team that can go into schools and really provide the best opportunities for these kids to engage with this history. But right now, you know, in the meantime, before we add our education manager, we often partner with schools. So I've done a bunch of walking tours privately for school groups, like I did, I think, 4 in the last couple weeks. So we try to provide these opportunities however we can. And I know that there are also efforts throughout the legislative system to try to boost stories like these, but it's still a problem we are trying to solve today.
So what can teachers, homeschool moms, and dads, how can they access this information online?
Awesome. Yeah, they can go to Oregon Black Pioneers and our educators page. So OregonBlackPioneers.org/educators. And there, anybody can download these lesson plans. So it's really great for homeschool folks and then also for any teachers that are, and anyone that's interested in kind of engaging with this history as you get primary sources and all of the information to teach this history for folks.
Okay. Well, I alluded to this early on. The Trump administration is now targeting schools and libraries and museums to root out what it calls, quote, improper ideology, end quote. And much of the history of Black America seems to have fallen into that category. What are your thoughts about the impact of public policy on teaching the history of Oregon's Black pioneers?
I am not going to lie that it is honestly a very scary and daunting time in terms of trying to make sure that these stories don't literally get erased as they are doing that on, government websites and things of the like, and targeting folks, as you mentioned. And so I will admit that it is honestly quite terrifying. But thankfully, we're here and other organizations like ours exist all across Oregon and across the U.S., because we're not the only organization that talks about these stories. We're just the only statewide organization that talks about these stories. And so, you know, we are lucky to partner with lots of other organizations to make sure that there are stewards of these stories and to make sure that they are still available for folks. And so we will, you know, we don't have any federal funding that should impact us. We are, thankfully, despite the realities that are happening right now, a little bit insulated from those issues. And so we will be here. We will make sure that this history is available, and we'll do our best to share it in every way that we can,
okay,
despite
we've got about 90 seconds left, but I have to admit that I do have a problem with the term pioneer because it holds the connotation of European colonialism. Everybody that hears the word pioneer needs no more explanation to conjure up an image of a white man in an unfamiliar wilderness discovering pristine lands that Native peoples call home. And yet Native peoples are not called pioneers. So I just kind of, it rubs me the wrong way. But maybe I just need to think about it a different way.
That is a very fair critique, and you know, I wouldn't necessarily say that you're wrong, but the reason that we use the word pioneers is to change that perception of the word and of Oregon, because I think a lot of times people do associate the pioneer era and the pioneer idea with Oregon. And we're trying to demonstrate that, yes, pioneers were here, and they weren't exactly what you might have expected them to look like.
Okay, and we're going to have to leave it there. Yeah, we're going to have to leave it there. But on May 17th in Jacksonville, you'll be there. Is that am I? Okay. So that's all the time we have. Thank you both.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah. Thank you so much.